But they're ignoring me, and the air has just stopped right there as Ben takes it out of the rucksack, and he and Killian look at it, and I see that it's not quite a book, more a journal-type thing with a nice leather cover, and when Ben thumbs through it, the pages are cream-colored and filled with handwriting. Ben closes it like it's an important thing, and he wraps it inside a plastic bag to protect it and puts it in the rucksack. They both turn to me. "I ain't going nowhere," I say, and there's a knock on the front door. For a second, nobody says nothing. Everyone just freezes. Manchie's got so many things he wants to bark that nothing comes out for a minute until he finally barks, "Door!" But Killian grabs him by the collar with one hand and by the maul with the other, shutting him up. We all look up at each other, wondering what to do next. There's another knock, and then a voice comes through the walls. "I know you're in there." "Damn and blast," Ben says. "Davy Ruddy Prentice," Killian says. "That's Mr. Prentice Jr., the man of the law." "Do you not think I can hear your noise?" Mr. Prentice Jr. says through the door. "Benison Moore? Killian Boyd?" The voice makes a little pause. "Todd Hewitt?" "Well, so much for hiding," I say, crossing my arms, still a little annoyed at it all. Killian and Ben look at each other again. Then Killian lets go of Manchie, says, "Stay here," to both of us, and heads for the door. Ben shoves the sack of food into the rucksack and ties it shut. He hands it to me. "Put this on," he whispers. I don't take it at first, but he gestures with a serious look, so I take it and put it on. It weighs a ton. We hear Killian open the front door. "What do you want, Davy?"
"That's Sheriff Prentice to you, Killian."
"We're in the middle of lunch, Davy," Killian says. "Come back later."
"I don't think I will. I think I need to have a word with young Todd."
Ben looks at me, worry in his noise. "Todd's got farm work," Killian says. "He's just leaving out the back. I can hear him go." And these are instructions from me and Ben, ain't they? But I ruddy well want to hear what's going on, and I ignore Ben's hand on my shoulder, trying to pull me toward the back door.
"You take me for a fool, Killian?"
Mr. Prentice Jr. says. "Do you really want an answer to that, Davy?"
"I can hear his noise not 20 feet behind you. Ben's too."
We hear a shift in the mood.
"I just want to talk to him. He ain't in no trouble."
"Why you got a rifle then, Davy?" Killian asks, and Ben squeezes my shoulder, probably without even thinking. Mr. Prentice Jr.'s voice and noise both change again.
"Bring him out, Killian. You know why I'm here. Seems like a funny little word floated out of your boy into town all innocent-like, and we just want to see what it's all about, that's all."
"We?" Killian says.
"His Honor the Mayor would like a word with young Todd."
Mr. Prentice Jr. raises his voice.
"Y'all come out now, you hear? Ain't no trouble going on. Just a friendly chat."
Ben nods his head at the back door all firm-like, and there ain't no arguing with him this time. We start stepping toward it slowly, but Manchie's kept his trap shut for just about as long as he can bear and barks,
"Todd! Y'all ain't thinking about sneaking out the back way, are ya?"
Mr. Prentice Jr. calls.
"Out of my way, Killian."
"Get off my property, Davy," Killian says.
"I ain't telling you twice."
"I believe you've already told me about 3 times, Davy, so if you're threatening, it ain't working." There's a pause, but the noise from them both gets louder, and Ben and I know what's coming next, and suddenly everything's moving fast, and we hear a loud thump, followed quick by another 2, and me and Ben and Manchie are running to the kitchen, but when we get there, it's over. Mr. Prentice Jr. is on the floor, holding his mouth, blood already coming from it. Killian's got Mr. Prentice Jr.'s rifle in his hands and is pointing it at Mr. Prentice Jr. "I said, get off my property, Davy," he says. Mr. Prentice Jr. looks at him, then looks at us, still holding his bloody mouth. Like I say, He ain't barely 2 years older than me, barely able to even get a sentence out without his voice breaking. But he's had his birthday to be a man, so there he is, our sheriff. The blood from his mouth is getting on the little brown hairs he calls a mustache, and everyone else calls nothing.
You know this answers the asking, don't you?
He spits some blood and a tooth onto our floor.
You know this ain't the end.
He looks right at my eye.
You found something, didn't you, boy?
Killian aims the rifle at his head.
Out, he says.
We got plans for you, boy.
Mr. Prentice Jr. smiles bloodily at me and gets to his feet.
The boy who's last. One more month, ain't it?
I look to Killian, but all he does is cock the rifle loudly, getting his point across. Mr. Prentice Jr. looks back at us, spits again, and says,
Be seeing ya,
trying to sound tough, but his voice squeaks and he takes off as fast as he can back to the town. Killian slams the door behind him.
Todd's gotta go, now. Back through the swamp.
I know, Ben says. I was hoping.
Me too,
Killian says.
Whoa, whoa,
I say.
I ain't going back through the swamp. There's spackle there.
Keep your thoughts quiet, Killian says. That's more important than you know.
Well, since I don't know nothing, that ain't hard,
I say.
I ain't going nowhere till someone tells me what's going on.
Todd,
Ben starts.
They'll be coming back, Todd,
Killian says. Davy Prentice will come back and he won't be alone, and we won't be able to protect you from all of them at once.
But no arguing,
Killian says.
Come on, Todd,
Ben says.
Manchie's gonna have to go with you.
Oh, man, this just gets better, I say.
Todd,
Killian says, and I look at him, and he's changed a little. There's something new in his noise, a sadness. A sadness like grief.
Todd,
he says again. Then suddenly he grabs me and hugs me to him as hard as he can. It's too rough, and I bash my cut lip on his collar and say, Ow! And push him away.
You may hate us for this, Todd,
he says,
but try to believe. It's only 'cause we love you, all right?
No, I say, it's not all right. It's not all right at all.
But Killian's not listening, as usual. He stands up and says to Ben,
Go, run. I'll hold him off as long as possible.
I'll come back a different way, Ben says. See if I can throw him off the trail. They clasp hands for a long minute. Then Ben looks at me, says,
Come on.
And as he's dragging me out of the room to get to the back door, I see Killian pick up the rifle again, and he glances up at me and catches my eye, and there's a look to him, a look written all over him and his noise, that this is a bigger goodbye than it even seems, that this is it. The last time he ever expects to see me, and I open my mouth to say something, but then the door closes on him, and he's gone.
5. The Things You Know.
I'll get you to the river, Ben says as we hurry across our fields for the second time this morning. You can follow it down to where it meets the swamp.
There ain't no path that way, Ben,
I say,
and there's crocs everywhere. You trying to get me killed?
He looks back at me, his eyes all level, but he keeps on hurrying.
There's no other way, Todd.
Crocs! Swamp! Quiet! Pooh!
Manchie barks. I've stopped even asking what's going on, since nobody seems to want to tell me nothing, so we just keep on moving past the sheep, still not in their paddocks, and now maybe never getting there.
Sheep!
They say, watching us pass. On we go, past the main barn, down one of the big irrigation tracks, turning right at a smaller one, heading toward where the wilderness starts, which pretty much means the beginning of the rest of this whole empty planet. Ben don't start talking again till we get to the tree line.
There's food in your rucksack to last you for a bit, but you should make it stretch as far as you can, eating what fruit you find and anything you can hunt.
How long do I gotta make it last? I ask. How long till I can come back?
Ben stops. We're just inside the trees. The river's 100 feet away, but you can hear it, because this is where it starts rushing downhill to get to the swamp. Suddenly, it feels like just about the loneliest place in the whole wide world.
You ain't coming back, Todd, Ben says quietly. You can't.
Why not? I say, and my voice comes out all mewing like a kitten, but I can't help it.
What did I do, Ben?
Ben comes up to me. You didn't do anything, Todd. You didn't do anything at all. He hugs me real hard, and I can feel my chest start to press again, and I'm so confused and frightened and angry. Nothing was different in the world this morning when I got out of bed, and now here I am being sent away and Ben and Killian acting like I'm dying, and it ain't fair, and I don't know why it ain't fair, but it just ain't fair.
I know it ain't fair, Ben says, pulling himself away and looking me hard in the face. But there is an explanation.
He turns me around and opens my rucksack, and I can feel him taking something out.
The book.
I look at him and look away.
You know I don't read too good, Ben, I say, embarrassed and stupid.
He crouches down a bit so we're truly face to face. His noise ain't making me comfortable at all.
I know, he says gentle-like. I always meant to try and spend more time.
He stops. He holds out the book again.
It's your ma's, he says.
It's her journal, starting from the day you were born, Todd. He looks down at it.
Till the day she died.
My noise opens wide.
My ma. My ma's own book.
Ben runs his hand over the cover.
We promised her we'd keep you safe, he says.
We promised her, and then we had to put it out of our minds so there was nothing in our noise, nothing that would let anyone know what we were going to do.
Including me, I say. It had to be including you. If just a little bit got into your noise, and then into the town...
He don't finish.
Like the silence I found in the swamp today, I say. Like that getting into town and causing all this havoc.
No, that was a surprise. He looks up at the sky, like he's telling it just how completely a surprise it all was.
No one would have guessed that happening.
It's dangerous, Ben. I could feel it. But all he does is hold out the book again. I start shaking my head.
Ben... I know, Todd, he says, but try your best.
No, Ben. He catches my eyes again. He holds them with his own.
Do you trust me, Todd Hewitt?
I scratch my side. I don't know how to answer.
Course I do, I say. Or at least I did before you started packing bags I didn't know about for me.
He looks at me harder, his noise focused like a sun ray.
Do you trust me? He asks again.
I look at him and, yeah, I do, even now.
I trust you, Ben.
Then trust me when I say that the things you know right now, Todd, those things ain't true.
Which things?
I ask, my voice rising a little.
Why can't you just tell me?
'Cause knowledge is dangerous, he says, as serious as I've ever seen him. And when I look into his noise to see what he's hiding, it roars up and slaps me back. If I told you now, it would buzz in you louder than a hive at honey-gathering time, and Mayor Prentice would find you as fast as he could spit. And you have to get away from here. You have to, as far away as you can.
But where? I say. There ain't nowhere else.
Ben takes a deep breath.
There is. He says, there's somewhere else.
I don't say nothing to that.
Folded in the front of the book, Ben says, there's a map. I made it myself, but don't look at it. Not till you're well out of town, okay? Just go to the swamp. You'll know what to do from there.
But I can tell from his noise that he's not at all sure I'll know what to do from there.
Or what I'm gonna find there, do you?
He don't say nothing to that. And I'm thinking.
How did you know to have a bag already packed? I say, stepping back a little. If this thing in the swamp is so unexpected,
Why are you so ready to chuck me out into the wilderness today?
It was the plan all along, ever since you were little. I see him swallow. I hear his sadness everywhere. As soon as you were old enough to make it on your own.
You were just going to throw me out so the crocs could eat me.
I'm stepping back farther.
No, Todd.
He moves forward, the book still in his hand. I step back. He makes a gesture like, okay. And he closes his eyes and opens up his noise for me.
1 month's time, is the first thing it says. And here comes my birthday. The day I'll become a man. And there it all is. What happens? What the other boys did who became men. All alone. All by themselves. How every last bit of boyhood is killed off, and what actually happened to the people who... Holy crap. And I don't want to say no more about it. And I can't say at all how it makes me feel. I look at Ben, and he's a different man than he always was. He's a different man than the one I've always known. Knowledge is dangerous.
It's why no one tells you, he says, to keep you from running.
You wouldn't have protected me?
I say, mewing again.
Shut up.
This is how we're protecting you, Todd, he says, by getting you out. We had to be sure you could survive on your own. That's why we taught you all that stuff. Now, Todd, you have to go.
If that's what's happening in a month, why wait this long? Why not take me away sooner?
We can't come with you. That's the whole problem. And we couldn't bear to send you off on your own, to see you go not so young.
He rubs the cover of the book with his fingers again.
And we were hoping there might be a miracle.
One where we wouldn't have to lose you, says his noise.
But there ain't been no miracle, I say after a second.
He shakes his head. He holds out the book.
I'm sorry, he says.
I'm so sorry it has to be this way.
And there's so much true sorrow in his noise, so much worry and edginess. I know he's speaking true. I know he can't help what's happening, and I hate it, but I take the book from him, and I put it back in the plastic and into the rucksack. We don't say nothing more. What else is there to say? Everything and nothing. You can't say everything, so you don't say nothing.
He pulls me to him again, hitting my lip on his collar just like Killian, but this time I don't pull away.
Always remember, he says,
when your ma died, you became our son, and I love you, and Killian loves you. Always have, always will.
I start to say, I don't want to go,
but it never comes out. 'Cause bang goes the loudest thing I ever heard in Prentistown, like something's blowing right up, right on up to the sky. And it can only be coming from our farm. Ben lets me go real quick. He ain't saying nothing, but his noise is screaming, Killian! All over the place.
I'll come back with you, I say. I'll help you fight.
No, Ben shouts. You have to get away. Promise me. Go through the swamp and get away. I don't say nothing for a second.
Promise me,
Ben says again, demanding it this time.
Promise,
Manchi barks, and there's fear even in that.
I promise,
I say. Ben reaches behind his back and unclasps something. He wriggles it for a second or two before it comes unlatched completely. He hands it to me. It's his hunting knife. The big, ratchety one with the bone handle and the serrated edge that cuts practically everything in the world. The knife I was hoping to get for the birthday when I became a man. It's still in his belt, so I can wear it myself.
Take it, he says. Take it with you to the swamp. You may need it. I never fought a spackle before, Ben.
He still holds out the knife, and so I take it. There's another bang from the farm. Ben looks back toward it, then back to me.
Go, follow the river down to the swamp and out. Run as fast as you can, and you better damn well not turn back, Todd Hewitt.
He takes my arm and grips it hard.
If I can find you, I'll find you, I swear it, he says. But you keep going, Todd. You keep your promise.
This is it. This is goodbye. A goodbye I wasn't even looking for.
Ben, go!
He shouts and takes off, looking back once as he runs, and then racing off back to the farm, back to whatever's happening at the end of the world. 6. The knife in front of me.
Come on, Manshee!
I say, turning to run, though every bit of me wants to follow Ben as he's running across the fields a different way, just like he said, to confuse anyone out looking for noise. I stop for a second when I hear a bunch of smaller bangs from the direction of the house, which gotta be rifle shots, and I think of the rifle that Killian took from Mr. Prentice Jr., and all the rifles that Mayor Prentice and his men have locked away in the town, and how all those guns against Killian's stolen rifle and the few others we got in the house ain't gonna be much of a fight for very long, and it gets me wondering what the bigger bangs were, and I realize they were probably Killian blowing up the generators to confuse the men and make everyone's noise so loud they can't hear even the whisper of mine way out here. All this for me to get away.
Come on, Manshee,
I say again, and we run the last few feet to the river. Then we take a right and start following the river downhill, keeping away from the rushes at the water's edge. The rushes where the crocs live. I take the knife from its sheath, and I keep it in my hand as we move along fast.
What's on, Todd?
Manshee keeps barking, which is his version of what's going on.
I don't know, Manshee. Shut up so I can think.
The rucksack's banging into my back as we run, but we keep going as best we can, kicking through river shrubs and jumping over fallen logs.
I'll come back. That's what I'll do. I'll come back.
They said I'd know what to do, and now I do know. I'll go to the swamp and kill the spackle if I can, and then I'll come back and help Killian and Ben, and then we can all get away to this somewhere else Ben was talking about.
Yeah, that's what I'll do. Promise, Todd,
Manshee says, sounding worried as the ridge we're going along is getting closer and closer to the rushes.
Shut up, I say. I promise to keep on going, but maybe keep on going means coming back first. Todd,
Manshee says, and I don't believe it either. We've gotten out of hearing distance from the farm, and the river veers away east a little before it enters the top of the swamp, so it's taken us away from the town, too. And after a minute, there ain't nothing following us as we run except my noise and Manshee's noise, and the sound of the running river, which is just loud enough to cover the noise of a hunting croc. Ben says that's evolution, but he says not to think about it too much around Aaron. I'm breathing heavy, and Manshee's panting like he's about to keel over, but we don't stop. The sun is starting to set, but it's still light as anything, light that don't feel like it's going to hide you. The ground is flattening out, and we're getting down closer to river level as it all starts turning to marsh. Everything's getting muddier, and it's making us slow down. There's more rushes, too. Can't be helped.
Listen for crocs, I say to Manshee. Keep your ears open.
'Cause the water from the river is slowing, and if you can keep your own noise quiet enough, you can start to hear them out there. The ground's got even wetter. We're barely making walking pace now, sloshing through mud. I grip the knife harder and hold it out in front of me.
Todd,
Manshee says.
Do you hear them?
I whisper, trying to watch my step and watch the rushes and watch out for Manshee all at the same time.
Crocs, Todd,
Manshee says, pretty much as quiet as he can bark. I stop, and I listen hard. And out there in the rushes, out there in more than one place, I can hear 'em.
Flash,
they're saying.
Flash,
and
feast,
and
tooth.
Crap, I say.
Crocs,
Manshee says again. Come on, I say, and we start splashing along 'cause we're in muck now. My shoes start sinking with each step, and water's coming up over the top of them, and there's no way to go except through the rushes. I start swinging the knife as we go, trying to cut any rush that's in front of me. I look ahead, and I can see where we're going, up and to the right. We've made it past the town, and it's the part where the wild fields come down by the school and meet up with the swamp. And if we get through this marshy part here, we'll be on safe ground, and we can get onto the paths that head into the dark of the swamp.
Was it really only this morning I was here last?
Hurry up, Manchie, I say. Almost there.
Flesh.
And
feast.
And tooth. And I swear it's getting closer. Come on!
Flesh.
God! I'm cutting my way through the rushes and pulling my feet out of mud and
flesh. And feast.
And tooth. And then I hear,
Whirler dog.
And I know we're done for. Run! I yell. And we run, and Manchie lets out a frightened yelp and leaps past me, but I see a croc rear up out of the rushes in front of him, and it jumps for him, but Manchie's so scared he jumps even higher, higher than he really knows how, and the croc's teeth snap on empty air, and it lands with a splash next to me, looking mighty pissed off, and I hear its noise hiss,
Whirler boy!
And I'm running, and it jumps for me, and I'm not even thinking, and I'm turning, and I'm pushing my hand up, and the croc comes crashing down on top of me, and its mouth is open, and its claws out, and I think I'm about to be dead, and I'm thrashing my way back out of the muck, up onto the dry part, and it's on its hind legs, coming after me out of the rushes, and it takes a minute of me yelling, and a Manchie barking his head off before I realize that it's not actually coming after me no more, that the croc's dead. That my new knife is right through its head, still stuck in the croc. And the only reason the croc's still thrashing is 'cause I'm still thrashing. And I shake the croc off the knife and the croc falls to the ground. And I sort of just fall over too in celebration of not being dead. And it's when I'm gasping for air from the rush of my blood and Manchie's barking and barking and we're both laughing from relief that I realize we've been too loud ourselves to hear something important.
"Going somewhere, young Todd?"
Aaron, standing right over me. Before I can do nothing, he punches me in the face. I fall backward onto the ground, the rucksack digging into my back and making me look like an upturned turtle. My cheek and my eye are just singing with pain, and I haven't even moved properly before Aaron's grabbing me by my shirt front and the skin beneath and lifting me to my feet. I yell out from how much it hurts. Manchie barks an angry, "Aaron!" and goes for Aaron's legs, but Aaron doesn't even look before kicking him out of the way hard. Aaron's holding me up to look him in the face. I can only keep the one non-painful eye open to meet his.
"Just what in the name of God's bounteous glorified Eden are you doing down here in the swamp, Todd Hewitt?"
he says, his breath smelling like meat, and his noise the scariest kind of crazy you never want to hear.
"You're supposed to be at your farm right now, boy."
With his free hand, he punches me in the stomach. I try to bend over with the pain of it, but he's still holding onto my shirt front and the skin below.
"You gotta go back," he says. "There's things you need to see."
I'm gasping for breath, but the way he says it catches my ear. And some of the flickers I'm catching in his noise make it so I can see a little bit of the truth.
"You sent them?" I say. "It wasn't me they heard. It was you."
"Smart boys make useless men," he says, twisting his gripping hand.
I cry out, but I ruddy well keep talking, too.
"They didn't hear the quiet in my noise. They heard it in your noise. And you sent them to me to keep them from coming after you."
"Oh, no, Todd," he says. "They heard it in your noise. I just made sure they did. I made sure they knew who was responsible for bringing danger to our town."
He grits his teeth into a wild smile beneath his beard.
"And who should be rewarded for his efforts?"
"You're crazy,"
I say. And boy, is it ever true, and boy, do I wish it wasn't. His smile falls, and his teeth clench harder.
"It's mine, Todd," he says. "Mine."
I don't know what this means, but I don't stop to think about it, 'cause I realize instead that both Aaron and I have forgotten one important thing.
I never let go of the knife. A whole bunch of things happen at once. Aaron hears knife in my noise and realizes his mistake. He pulls back his free fist to make another punch. I pull back my knife hand, and I wonder if I can actually stab him. There's a breaking sound from the rushes, and Manchie barks, "Crock!" And all at the same time we hear,
"Whirler Man!"
Before Aaron can even turn, the croc is on him, clamping its teeth onto his shoulder and grabbing him with its claws and pulling him back toward the rushes. Aaron lets go of me and I fall to the ground again, clutching at all the bruises he's left on my chest. I look up and I see Aaron thrashing in the muck now, fighting with the croc and the fins on the backs of other crocs heading his way, too.
"Out of here!"
Manchie's barking, almost shrieking.
"Too effing right,"
I say, and I stumble to my feet, the rucksack knocking me a little off balance and my hurt eye trying to peel open, but we don't stop, and we run, and we run, and we run. We get out of the marshes and run along the bottom of the fields to the start of the swamp path, and we run into the swamp along it, and when we get to the log that Manchie always needs help over, he just sails right over it without even stopping, and I'm right behind him, and we're running our way to the spackle buildings just like we were this morning. And the knife is still in my hand, and my noise is thudding so loud, and I'm so frightened and hurt and mad that I know beyond any shadow of a thought that I'm going to find the spackle hiding in his noise hole, and I'm going to kill him dead, dead, dead for everything that's happened today. "Where is it?" I ask Manchie. "Where's the quiet?" Manchie's sniffing away like mad, running from building to building, and I'm doing my best to calm my noise, but there don't seem any chance of that. "Hurry," I say, "before it runs..." And it's barely out of my mouth before I hear it. The rip in the noise, as big and horrible as life itself. I can hear it a little bit away, behind the spackle buildings, behind some bushes. It ain't getting away this time.
"Quiet!"
Manchie barks, all keyed up, and he runs past the buildings and into the bushes. And the quiet moves too. And though I can feel the pressure in my chest again, and the terrible, mournful things coming into my eyes, this time I don't stop. This time I run after my dog and I don't stop, and I take in my breath and I swallow away the pressure, and I wipe the water from my eyes, and I grip the knife, and I can hear Manchie barking, and I can hear the silence, and it's just around this tree, just around this tree, just around this tree, and I'm yelling and I'm going around the tree, and I'm running at the silence, and my teeth are bared and I'm screaming and Manchie's barking and I stop. I stop right there in my tracks. I don't. I do absolutely not put down the knife. There it is, looking back at us, breathing heavy, crouched at the base of a tree, cowering from Manchie, its eyes practically dying from fright, but still trying to offer up a pitiful threat with its arms. And I just stop. I hold my knife.
"Spackle!"
Manchie barks, though he's too chicken to attack now that I've held back.
"Spackle! Spackle! Spackle!"
"Shut up, Manchie," I say.
"Spackle!"
"I said, shut up!" I shout, which stops him.
"Spackle?"
Manchie says, unsure of things now. I swallow, trying to get rid of the pressure in my throat, the unbelievable sadness that comes and comes as I look at it, looking back at me. Knowledge is dangerous, and men lie, and the world keeps changing, whether I want it to or not. 'Cause it ain't a spackle.
"It's a girl,"
I say. "It's a girl." Part 2. 7. If there was.
"It's a girl,"
I say again. I'm still catching my breath, still feeling the pressure on my chest, definitely still holding the knife way out in front of me. A girl. It's looking back at us like we're gonna kill it. It's hunched down in a little ball, trying to make itself as small as possible, only taking its eyes off Manchie to snatch quick glances of me. Of me and my knife. Manchie's huffing and puffing, his back fur all ridged, hopping around like the ground is hot, looking as charged up and confused as I am, though completely hopeless about keeping in any way cool.
"What's girl?"
he barks.
"What's girl?"
By which he means, "What's a girl?"
Watch girl!
Manchie barks again, and when the girl looks like it might be about to make a leap back over the large root where it's huddling, Manchie's bark turns into a fierce growl.
Stay, 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 stay!
Good dog, I say, though I don't know why it's good what he's doing, but what else can you say? This makes no sense. No sense at all. And everything feels like it's starting to slip. Like the world is a table tilted on its side and everything on it is tipping over. I am Todd Hewitt, I think to myself, but who knows if that's even true anymore. Who are you? I finally say, if it can even hear me over all my raging noise and Manchie's nervous breakdown. Who are you? I say louder and clearer. What are you doing here? Where did you come from? It looks at me, finally, for more than just a second, taking its eyes off Manchie. It looks at my knife. Then it looks at my face above my knife. She looks at me. She does. She. I know what a girl is. Course I do. I seen them in the noise of their fathers in town, mourned like their wives, but not nearly so often. I seen them in vids, too. Girls are small and polite and smiley. They wear dresses and their hair is long and it's pulled into shapes behind their heads or on either side. They do all the inside-the-house chores while boys do all the outside. They reach womanhood when they turn 13, just like boys reach manhood, and then they're women, and they become wives. That's how New World works. Or at least that's how Prentice Town works. Worked. Was meant to, anyhow. But there ain't no girls. They're all dead. They died with their mothers and their grandmothers and their sisters and their aunties. They died in the months after I was born. All of them. Every single one. But here one is. And its hair ain't long. Her hair. Her hair ain't long. And she ain't wearing no dress. She's wearing clothes that look like way newer versions of mine. So new they're almost like a uniform, even though they're torn and muddy, and she ain't that small. She's my size, just by the looks of her, and she sure as all that's unholy, not smiley. No, not smiley at all.
Spackle?
Manchie barks quietly.
Would you effin' well shut up?
I say. So how do I know? How do I know it's a girl? Well, for one, she ain't no spackle. Spackle looked like men with everything a bit swelled up, everything a bit longer and weirder than on a man. Their mouths a bit higher than they should be, and their ears and eyes way, way different. And spacks grew their clothes right on their bodies, like lichens you could trim away to whatever shape you needed. Product of swamp dwelling, according to another Ben best guess. And she don't look like that, and her clothes are normal, and so there ain't no way she's a spackle. And for two, I just know. I just do. I can't tell you, but I look and I see and I just know. She don't look like the girls I seen in vids, or in noise, and I never seen no girl in the flesh, but there she is. She's a girl and that's that. Don't ask me. Something about her shape. Something about her smell. Something I don't know. But it's there, and she's a girl. If there was a girl, that's what she'd be. And she ain't another boy. She just ain't. She ain't me. She ain't nothing like me at all. She's something completely other else altogether. And I don't know how I know, but I know who I am. I am Todd Hewitt, and I know what I am not, and I am not her. She's looking at me. She's looking at my face, in my eyes, looking and looking. And I'm not hearing nothing. Oh, man. My chest. It's like falling.
Who are you?
I say again, but my voice actually catches. Like it breaks up because I'm so sad. Shut up. I grit my teeth and I get a little madder and I say it yet again.
Who are you?
And I hold out the knife a little farther. With my other arm, I have to wipe my eyes real fast. Something's got to happen. Someone's got to move. Someone's got to do something. And there ain't no someone but me, still, whatever the world's doing. "Can you talk?" I say. She just looks back at me.
"Quiet!"
Manchi barks.
"Shut it, Manchi!"
I say. "I need to think." And she's still just looking back at me, with no noise at all. What do I do? It ain't fair. Ben told me I'd get to the swamp and I'd know what to do, but I don't know what to do. They didn't say nothing about a girl. They didn't say nothing about why the quiet makes me ache so much I can barely stop from ruddy weeping. Like I'm missing something so bad I can't even think straight. Like the emptiness ain't in her. It's in me. And there ain't nothing that's ever gonna fix it. What do I do? What do I do? She seems like maybe she's calming down. She's not shaking as much as she was. Her arms aren't up so high, and she's not looking like she's about to run off at the first opportunity. Though, how can you know for sure when a person's got no noise? How can they be a person if they ain't got no noise? And can she hear me? Can she? Can a person with no noise hear it at all? I look at her and I think, as loud and clear as I can. Can you hear me? Can you? But she don't change her face. She don't change her look. Okay, I say, and I take a step back. Okay, you just stay there, okay? You just stay right there. I take a few more steps back, but I keep my eyes on her, and she keeps her eyes on me. I bring my knife arm down, and I slide it out of one strap of the rucksack. Then I lean over and drop the rucksack to the ground. I keep the knife in one hand, and with the other, I open up the rucksack and fish out the book. It's heavier than you'd think a thing made of words could be. And it smells of leather, and there's pages and pages of my ma's that'll have to wait.
You watch her, Manchi,
I say.
Watch,
he barks. I look inside the front cover, and there's the paper folded in just like Ben said. I unfold it. There's a hand-drawn map on one side, and then a whole bunch of writing on the back, but it's all a big block of letters which I ain't got the calmness of noise to even try right now, so I just look at the map. Our house is right at the top, and the town just below with the river Manchi and I came down off to one side, leading into the swamp, and that's where we are now. But there's more to it, ain't there? The swamp keeps going till it starts being a river again. And there's arrows drawn along the riverbank, so that's where Ben is wanting me and Manchi to go. And I follow the arrows with my fingers, and they lead right out of the swamp. They lead right to... whoomp! The world goes bright for a second as something clubs me upside the head, right on the sore spot where Aaron punched me. And I fall over, but as I'm falling, I swing the knife up and I hear a little yelp of pain, and I catch myself before I fall all the way down, and I turn, sitting down on the ground hard, holding the back of my knife hand to the pain in my head, but looking at where the attack came from. And it's here that I learned my very first lesson. Things with no noise can sneak right up on you. Sneak right up on you like they ain't even there. The girl is on her butt, too, sitting on the ground away from me, holding on to one of her upper arms with her hand, blood coming from twixt her fingers. She's dropped the stick she hit me with, and her face is all collapsed in on itself with what she must be feeling from that cut.
"What the hell'd you do that for?"
I shout, trying not to touch my face too hard. "Man, I'm sick of being hit today." The girl just looks at me, her forehead still creased, holding her cut, which is kinda bleeding a lot.
"Stick, Todd!"
Manchi barks.
"And where the hell were you?"
I say to him.
"Pooh, Todd!"
I make a "gah!" sound, and I kick some dirt at him. He scrabbles back, then starts sniffing at some bushes like there ain't nothing unusual going on in the world. Dogs got attention spans about as long as a matchstick. Idiot things. It's starting to get dark now, the sun really setting. The already dark swamp getting even darker, and I still don't have no answer. Time keeps passing, and I ain't supposed to wait here, and I ain't supposed to go back, and there ain't supposed to be a girl. Boy, that cut really is bleeding on her.
Hey,
I say, my voice shaky from the charge running through me. I am Todd Hewitt, I think. I am almost a man. Hey, I say again, trying to be a little calmer. The girl looks at me. I ain't gonna hurt you, I say, breathing hard, just like her. You hear me? I ain't gonna hurt you, as long as you don't try to hit me with no more sticks, all right? She looks at my eyes. Then she looks at the knife. Is she understanding? I lower the knife away from my face and bring it down near the ground. I don't let go of it, though. With my free hand, I start looking through the rucksack again till I find the Medipack Ben threw in. I hold it up. Medipack, I say. She doesn't change. Medipack, I say slowly. I point to my own upper arm, to where the cut is on her. You're bleeding. Nothing. I sigh and I start to stand. She flinches and scoots back on her butt. I sigh again in an angry way. I ain't gonna hurt you. I hold up the Medipack. It's medicine. It'll stop the bleeding. Still nothing. Maybe there ain't nothing in her at all. Look, I say, and I snap open the Medipack. I fumble with one hand and take out an antiseptic pad, tearing away the paper cover with my teeth. I'm probably bleeding from where first Aaron hit me and then the girl, so I take the pad and rub it over my eye and eyebrow. I pull it away and, yep, there's blood. I hold the pad out to the girl so she can see it. See? I point to my eye. See? It stops things bleeding. I take a step forward, just the one. She flinches, but not as much. I take another step, then another, and then I'm next to her. She keeps looking at the knife. I ain't putting it down, so just forget it, I say. I push the pad toward her arm. Even if it's deep, this stitches it up, okay? I'm trying to help you. Todd? Manchi barks, full of asking marks. In a minute, I say. Look, you're bleeding everywhere, okay? And I can fix it, all right? Just don't get any ideas about any more ruddy sticks. She's watching, and she's watching, and she's watching. And I'm trying to be as calm as I really don't feel. I don't know why I'm helping her, not after she whacked me on the head, but I don't know what to do about anything. Ben said there'd be answers in the swamp, and there ain't no answers. There's just this girl who's bleeding because I cut her, even though she deserved it, and if I can stop the bleeding, then maybe that's doing something. I don't know. I don't know what to do, so I just do this. The girl's still watching me, still breathing heavy. But she ain't running, and she ain't flinching. And then, so you can hardly tell at all, she's turning her upper arm toward me a little bit so I can reach the cut.
Todd!
Manchi barks again.
Shush!
I say, not wanting to scare the girl any more. Being this close to her silence is like my heart breaking all over the place. I can feel it, like it's pulling me down into a bottomless pit, like it's calling for me to just fall and fall and fall. But I keep my nerve, I do. I keep it, and I press the antiseptic pad on her arm, rubbing the cut, which is pretty deep, till it closes a bit and stops bleeding. You gotta be careful, I say. That ain't a permanent heal. You gotta be careful with it till your body heals the rest, okay? And all she does is look at me. Okay, I say, to myself as much as anyone, 'cause now that that's done, what's next?
Todd!
Manchi barks.
Todd!
And no more sticks, all right? I say to the girl. No more hitting me.
Todd!
Manchi again. And obviously, my name's Todd. And there, just there, just there in the fading light, is there a little beginning of a start of a smile? Is there? Can you? I say, looking as deep into her eyes as the pressure in my chest allows. Can you understand me?
Todd!
Manchi's barking picks up a notch. I turn to him.
What?
Todd! Todd!
And then we can all hear it.
pounding through the bushes and breaking branches and running footsteps and noise and noise and, oh, crap, noise. Get up, I say to the girl. Get up, now! I grab my rucksack and put it on, and the girl's looking terrified, but in a not helpful, paralyzed way, and I shout, come on! To her again, and I grab her arm, not thinking about the cut now, and I try to lift her to her feet, but all of a sudden, it's too late, and there's a yell and a roar and a sound like whole trees falling down, and me and the girl can only turn to look, and it's Aaron, and he's mad, and he's messed up, and he's coming right for us. 8. The choices of a knife. He's on us in 3 steps. Before I can even try to run, he's coming at me with his hands out, grabbing my neck, smashing me back against a tree.
You little filth!
He screams, and presses his thumbs into my throat. I scrabble at his arms, trying to slash at him with the knife, but my rucksack has fallen and the strap has pinned my arm back against the tree so he can pretty much go on strangling me for as long as it takes. His face is a nightmare, a horrible thing I'm not going to stop seeing even if I ever get out of this. The Crocs took his left ear and a long strip of flesh with it going right down his left cheek. You can see his teeth through the gash, and it's causing his left eye to bulge forward like his head's been caught in mid-explosion. There are other gashes on his chin and neck, and his clothes are torn, and there's blood practically everywhere, and I can even see a croc tooth sticking out of a fleshy tear on his shoulder. I'm choking for breath, but I'm not getting any at all, and you can't believe how much it hurts, and the world's gone spinning, and my brain's going funny, and I have this stupid little thought that Aaron didn't survive the croc attack after all, that he died, but he's so pissed off at me that dying didn't stop him from coming here to kill me anyway.
What are you smiling at?
He screams, little bits of blood and spit and flesh spraying onto my face. He squeezes my neck harder and I can feel myself throwing up, but there's nowhere for it to go, and I can't breathe and all the lights and colors are flowing together, and I'm dying, and I'm going to die.
Ah!
Aaron suddenly jerks back, letting me go. I drop to the ground and throw up all over everywhere and take in a huge gasping breath that makes me cough in a way like I'm never going to stop. I look up and see Manchi's snout wrapped around Aaron's calf, biting it for all he's worth. Good dog! Aaron slams Manchi sideways with an arm, sending him flying into the bushes. I hear a thump and a yelp and a Todd! Aaron whirls around to me again, and I just can't stop looking at his face, at the gashes everywhere that no one could have survived. No one. It's not possible. Maybe he really is dead.
Where's the sign?
He says, his torn expression changing real quick and looking around in a sudden panic. The sign? The girl. I look too. She's gone. Aaron whirls again, this way, that. And then I see him hearing at the same time I do. Hearing the rustle and snap as she runs, hearing the silence as it flows away from us, and without another look at me, he takes off after her, and he's gone. And just like that, I'm alone. Just like that, like I have nothing to do with anything here. What a stupid day this has been.
Todd?
Manchi comes limping out of the bushes.
I'm okay, buddy.
I try to say, and get some of it out despite the coughing, even though it ain't true.
I'm okay.
I try to keep breathing through the coughs, forehead on the ground, dribbling spit and barf everywhere. I keep breathing, and these thoughts start coming. They come all uninvited, don't they? 'Cause maybe that could be it, couldn't it? Maybe it could be over, simple as that. The girl's obviously what Aaron wants. Whatever he means by the sign, right? The girl's obviously what the town wants, what with all the ruckus over the quiet and my noise. And so if Aaron can have her and the town can have her, then that could be the end of it, right? They could have what they want and leave me alone, and I could go back and everything could be like it was before, and yeah, it would probably be no good for the girl, but it might save Ben and Killian. It might save me. I'm just thinking it, all right? The thoughts rush in. That's all. Thoughts that this could be over as soon as it started.
Over,
Manchi murmurs.
and then I hear the terrible, terrible scream. That, of course, is the girl getting caught, and that's the choice made, ain't it? The next scream comes a second later, but I'm already on my feet without even really thinking it, slipping off my rucksack, leaning a bit, coughing still, reaching for more breath, but the knife in my hand and running. They're easy to follow. Aaron's torn through the bushes like a bull, and his noise is throwing up a roar, and always, always, always there's the silence of the girl, even behind her screams, which somehow makes it even harder to hear. I run as best I can after them, Manchie on my heels, and it ain't more than half a minute before we're there with genius me having no idea what to do now I've got here. Aaron's chased her into a bit of water about ankle deep and got her back up against a tree. He's got her wrists in his hands, but she's fighting him, fighting and kicking for all she's worth, but her face is a thing so scared I can barely get my words out.
"Leave her alone," my voice rasps. But no one hears me.
Aaron's noise is blazing so loud, I'm not sure he'd hear me even if I yelled,
"The Holy Sacrament,"
and
"The Sign from God," and "The Path of the Saint,"
and pictures of the girl in a church, pictures of the girl drinking the wine and eating the host, pictures of the girl as an angel, the girl as a sacrifice. Aaron gets both of her wrists in one of his fists, fumbles off the cord belt of his robe, and starts tying her hands together with it. The girl kicks him hard where Manchie bit him, and he hits her across the face with the back of his hand.
"Leave her alone!"
I say again, trying to make my voice louder.
"Alone!"
Manchie barks, still limping, but still ferocious. What a ruddy good dog. I step forward. Aaron's back's to me, like he don't even care I'm here. Like he don't even think of me as a threat.
"Let her go!"
I try to shout, but it just makes me cough some more. Still nothing, though. Still nothing from Aaron or anyone. I'm gonna have to do it. I'm gonna have to do it. Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, man. I'm gonna have to do it. I'm gonna have to kill him. I raise the knife. I've raised the knife. Aaron turns. Not even fast-like, just turns like someone's called his name. He sees me standing there, knife in the air, not moving like the goddamn coward idiot I am. And he smiles, and boy, I just can't say how awful a smile looks on that torn-up face.
"Your noise reveals you, young Todd,"
he says, letting go of the girl who's so tied up and beaten now she don't even try to run. Aaron takes a step toward me. I take a step back.
"Shut up. Please just shut up. The mayor will be disappointed to hear about your untimely departure from the earthly plane, boy,"
Aaron says, taking another step. I take another step, too, the knife in the air like it's of no use at all.
"But God has no use for a coward," Aaron says. "Does he, boy?"
Quick as a snake, his left arm knocks into my right, sending the knife flying out of my hand. He hits me in the face with the flat of his right hand, knocking me back down into the water, and I feel his knees land on my chest and his hands pressing down on my throat to finish the job, but this time my face is underwater, so it's going to be a lot faster. I struggle, but I've lost. I've lost. I've had my chance, and I've lost, and I deserve this, and I'm fighting. But I'm not nearly as strong as I was before, and I can feel the end coming. I can feel me giving up. I'm lost. Lost. And then, in the water, my hand finds a rock.
Boom!
I bring it up and hit him on the side of the head before I can think about it.
Boom!
I do it again.
Boom!
And again. I feel him slide off me, and I lift my head, choking on water and air. But I sit up and raise the rock again to hit him, but he's laying down in the water, face half in, half out, his teeth smiling up at me through the gash in his cheek. I scrabble back from him, coughing and spluttering, but he stays there, sinking a little, not moving. I feel like my throat is broken, but I throw up some water and can breathe a little better.
"Todd! Todd! Todd!"
Manchie says, coming up to me, all licky and barky like a little puppy. I scratch him twixt the ears, 'cause I can't say nothing yet. And then we both feel the silence and look up, and there's the girl standing over us, her hands still tied, holding the knife in her fingers. I sit frozen for a second, and Manchie starts to growl, but then I realize. I take a few more breaths, and then I reach up and take the knife from her fingers and cut the cord Aaron bound her wrists with. It drops away, and she rubs where it was tied, still staring at me, still not saying nothing. She knows. She knows I couldn't do it. God damn you, I think to myself. God damn you! She looks at the knife. She looks over at Aaron lying down in the water. He's still breathing. He gurgles water with every breath, but he's still breathing. I grip the knife. The girl looks at me, at the knife, at Aaron, at me again. Is she telling me? Is she telling me to do it? He's lying there, undefended, probably eventually drowning. And I have a knife. I get to my feet, fall down from dizziness, and get to my feet again. I step toward him. I raise my knife. Again. The girl takes in a breath, and I can feel her holding it. Manchie says, Todd? And I have my knife raised over Aaron one more time. I've got my chance. One more time, I've got my knife raised. I could do it. No one on New World would blame me. It'd be my right. I could just do it. But a knife ain't just a thing, is it? It's a choice. It's something you do. A knife says yes or no, cut or not, die or don't. A knife takes a decision out of your hand and puts it in the world, and it never goes back again. Aaron's gonna die. His face is ripped. His head is bashed. He's sinking into shallow water without ever waking up. He tried to kill me. He wanted to kill the girl. He's responsible for the ruckus in town. He's gotta be the one who sent the mayor to the farm, and 'cause of that, he's responsible for Ben and Killian. He deserves to die. He deserves it. And I can't bring the knife down to finish the job. Who am I? I am Todd Hewitt. I'm the biggest effing waste of nothing known to man. I can't do it. God damn you, I think to myself again. Come on, I say to the girl. We gotta get out of here.
9. When luck ain't with you. At first, I don't think she's gonna come. There's no reason for her to. No reason for me to ask her, but when I say to her, come on, a second time more urgently, and gesture with my hand, she follows me, follows Manchie, and that's how it is. That's what we do. Who knows if it's right, but that's what we do. Night's well and truly fallen. The swamp seems even thicker here, as black as anything. We rush on back a ways to get my rucksack, and then around and a little bit farther away in the dark to get some distance between us and Aaron's body. Please, let it be a body. We clamber around trees and over roots, getting deeper into the swamp. When we get to a small clearing where there's a bit of flat land and a break in the trees, I stop us. I'm still holding the knife. It rests there in my hand, shining at me like blame itself. Like the word coward flashing again and again. It catches the light of both moons, and my God, it's a powerful thing. A powerful thing. Like I'd have to agree to be a part of it rather than it being a part of me. I reach behind me and put it in the sheath between my back and the rucksack, where at least I won't have to see it. I take the rucksack off and fish through it for a flashlight. Do you know how to use one of these? I ask the girl, switching it on and off a couple of times. She just looks at me, as ever. Never mind, I say. My throat still hurts. My face still hurts. My chest still hurts. My noise keeps pounding me with visions of bad news, of how good a fight Ben and Killian managed to put up at the farm, of how long it'll take Mr. Prentice Jr. to find out where I've gone, of how long it'll take him to be on his way after me, after us. Not long at all, if he ain't already. So who ruddy cares if she knows how to use a flashlight? Of course she don't. I get the book out of the rucksack,
using the torch for a light. I open up to the map again, and I follow Ben's arrows from our farm down the river and through the swamp, and then out of the swamp as it turns back into river.